You're listening to A Senior Moment, the show for and about seniors. I'm Joanne Rideout. I'm here in the studio this month with my co-hosts, Doug Schaefer from the Olympic Area Agency on Aging and Michelle Lewis from Northwest Senior and Disability Services. Our guest today is Sarah Glorian. She is an attorney with the Northwest Justice Project. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Thanks so much for being here. Sarah, why don't we start with you? You are an attorney, and one of your specialties is elder law. Can you tell us what that means, what that term means?
Well, elder law... And it's not that it's a specialty of mine specifically, but it is an area of practice that I cover. Elder law is sort of an overlay of various laws that everybody is dealing with, but sometimes there might be specific issues that have to deal with seniors in particular. And there are also sometimes like estate planning and issues that are only relevant to people who are coming near the end of their lives.
Well, one of the things that we thought we would talk about today, since this elder law is a huge topic, is the issue of power of attorney and durable power of attorney, and what that means and why you, if you have an elderly relative, family member, or if you are elderly yourself, you might think about this as an option for you. So, Sarah, can you explain what is power of attorney and why would someone want to invoke this?
Well, actually, it's interesting that you framed it the way that you did, because this is actually, I think, a common misunderstanding about powers, is power of attorney is not something you want to be doing just when you're getting older. It's something that anybody who has a family or has issues that need to be dealt with, a power of attorney is something that they should be thinking about, but especially if you have a family, regardless of age. And there's two different types of powers. There's a power of attorney and there's a durable power of attorney. And these are... written documents, and I'm licensed to practice in Washington, so in Oregon the laws might be slightly different, but these are standard documents, and you can certainly contact Oregon Legal Services to get information about what the Oregon laws dictate. But as a general rule, these documents are serve the same purpose in just about every state. They just might have slightly different laws about how they're written. A power of attorney is for the purpose of making sure that your needs are being dealt with if you're unable to do it. And sometimes you might have it, even if you can do it, you want somebody else to be helping you out. The biggest difference that I think is important to emphasize from the beginning is the difference between a durable power of attorney and a power of attorney. For instance, if I ask Doug to take care of my cat for 3 weeks and it's in a power of attorney and it's authorizing him to go into my house and go buy the food on my credit card and whatever, however I draft it. If I get hit by a car during that 3 weeks, the power of attorney ceases to serve any purpose. There's specific language in a durable power of attorney that says that the power of attorney continues if I become incapacitated. So if I have a durable power of attorney with the necessary language and Doug is taking care of my cat and I get hit by a truck but I'm okay, but I'm in the hospital for a period of time beyond the 3 weeks, that power of attorney would still remain in effect. And that's really important because if you don't have that sort of magic language, the power of attorney serves no purpose. Powers also are really important because they're as narrow or as broad as you want them to be, and you own it. And that's one of the really big misunderstandings about powers is I've certainly seen cases, and I'm sure Doug and
Michelle
have seen cases like this where people are saying, like a grandma says, my grandson, I gave him my power of attorney, and he's selling my house out from under me. Why? Well, because I gave him the power of attorney. Grandma can take back that power of attorney anytime she wants, unless she's become incapacitated. The power of attorney belongs to the person who's given it away, and they can take it back at any time, and all she has to do is revoke the power of attorney. And so it's really important for people to understand that it's not just something you give away once, it's something you control. You make it as narrow, to take care of my cat for 3 weeks, to I'm authorizing somebody to take care of all of my financial and health needs, carte blanche. There's a full range of how you can dictate what it looks like.
Well, is this a document that is recorded somewhere officially, or is it just a document that you possess that you would show to contest it? Or, I mean, so is it, how is it, I mean, what kind, where is it as a legal document?
That's a good question. I actually have funny conversations about that. So when you choose somebody, if I choose Doug to take on as the agent for my power of attorney, I want to make sure that he has a copy. I want to have a copy. To the extent that maybe there's other family members who need to know that I've given Doug this responsibility, they may need to see the copy or at least know the copy exists. I think the more people are open about it, and a lot of people aren't open about this, it becomes very complicated because somebody says, "My mother gave me the power of attorney." Well, where is it? I don't know. I mean, you need to make sure that if you're the person asking somebody else to be the power, you make sure that they know what it is that you want, that they're going to honor what it is that you're asking them to do, that they're ready and willing to do it, and if not, choose somebody else. It's not wrong to, ask somebody who's got very different political philosophies and religious philosophies than you, but if they don't believe that you're supposed to be taken off life support and they're not going to honor that and that's what you want, then you need to find somebody else to make those difficult decisions for you if you're not able to. So it's really important that the people you talk to know the document exists, they have a copy. You don't need a lawyer to draw these up. It's not a bad idea to have a lawyer help you do it. In Washington State, on our website, which is washingtonlawhelp.org, we have samples, and you can do them yourself. It is not required to be notarized in the state of Washington, but we always tell people to get them notarized because sometimes people will think that they need to be, and they're not, except for real estate. So I definitely think it's important that people take the steps to make sure that everybody knows it exists. And they're difficult conversations if it's a really broad power, but they need to happen.
And so if someone wanted to revoke their power of attorney, would they just tear up the agreement, essentially?
Well, like in the packet that we give for Washington, there's actually a revocation sheet where you can do it in writing, and it does need to be in writing, but it's very simple. It's just, I revoke, basically. And so, like, if grandma's grandchild is selling the house from under her, she goes and says, I revoke this power, and gives it to all the different players, that's the end of it. The person no longer has the authority to be acting on grandma's behalf.
And so then, grandma in this case could take those documents to an attorney and say, to support her case if she was trying to stop the sale of her house,
right,
or something. Okay. Interesting. But this is not, so this is an agreement between two or more parties, and it really doesn't involve, say, registering with a county or anything like that.
No, powers do not need to be filed or recorded anywhere. I don't know if anything like that's required in Oregon, but that's kind of unusual. It's really more just that the document needs to exist.
Okay. Well, I wanted to ask Michelle and Doug a little bit about, what you're seeing with this. I mean, this is an interesting sort of legal agreement between private parties and a family. Are you getting any questions or things, maybe Michelle, from Northwest Senior and Disability Services, are you fielding questions from people about power of attorney issues?
Oh, sure, yeah. If so, people become a little more incapacitated or they can't take care of their own businesses easily, we oftentimes get questions about how to go about that. And one of the things we'll suggest is a power of attorney. Especially in cases where we've had, cognitive decline, they can't get through their billings, they can't take care of their own business at the bank. As Gloria mentioned earlier, probably earlier is better than when we hear about it, but we hear about it when things go wrong usually. And so then we'll be making referrals to like the Oregon Law Center if they need that, or to a local attorney to help them out.
Well, what kind of things do you hear that going wrong?
Just that, the idea that they can't, suddenly they've got a table full of bills that haven't been paid, things are getting shut off, bank accounts are bouncing, checking accounts, are bouncing. Maybe somebody's being relocated to an adult foster home or assisted living or a nursing home where it's going to be much more difficult for them to handle their business. It's a little nice to have family involved if they can, but a friend, neighbors, a trusted person in their life is a good asset for that.
Mm. Wow. So, Doug, how about you? You mentioned before the show we were talking a little bit about some of the kinds of questions that you get or situations that arise that your agency deals with.
Well, it's kind of the same thing. If it gets really complicated, for example, I want my son to do all my finances, but, he really doesn't agree with my end-of-life issues, so I want my daughter to take this. And if it starts getting, really sort of complex, we refer them to Clear Senior or Northwest Justice, and to talk to someone, or we have a senior legal advice clinic for people over 60 where they can come into the office and talk to an attorney also to get that cleared out. If it's really straightforward, and for example, in our family, my wife's an only child, so it's very clear, and we've got the DPOA and all that stuff, and she has all that stuff put together, because there's only, family-wise, there's only really one player, well, two, her and I, but, you know, that's it. We get a lot, as Michelle mentioned, we get a lot of calls that, well, now Dad is been diagnosed with Alzheimer's, for example. Generally, by the time they've determined that that's a diagnosis of Alzheimer's, a whole other discussion, but anyway, they get to that point where it's very recognizable, then it becomes, it can become questionable. If you're jumping in right now and you're doing this power of attorney and DPOA, and the doctor says, well, they're not really capable of making that decision, that gets tricky too. So again, some legal advice there. One of the difficulties that we run into with people is that if they're in an early stage of any kind of dementia, people will, and I probably will too, if and when I get there, try to cover. You know, no, everything's, oh, I just forgot, or blah, 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 blah. But also with that becomes a little paranoia. And so it becomes a little more difficult to, well, why do you want me to sign this paper now? What are you trying to do to me now? You know, so it's good, like Sarah said, to get this done early, you know, so that it's, you know, these are the issues, da 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 da. You know, if everything goes well, great, you know, we're done and nothing has to happen. But because it can get really sticky down the road. Other things we get calls about are like landlord and tenant law, you know, that kind of thing. You may have an elder who's been living someplace for a long time, and for whatever reason, maybe they're renting, and for whatever reason, the landlord decides, you know what, you know, they've been paying this low rent a long time, let's just get rid of them and get somebody else. So there's other issues too that could affect any of us, but for our senior population, sometimes it's a little more scary. They're less arguable, and so we refer again that to legal services. Another one is setting up your accounts, like we were talking before the show. We had a question that someone said, well, I'm a signatory on Dad's account, so I can help pay bills for him and that kind of stuff. But if he passes and he owes a lot of money over here, does that mean my accounts are going to be attached? And as Sarah said, well, no, unless it's a joint account. But if you have your own account and you're just a signatory on that one account, then no. But those are the type of questions that we don't profess to know. And there's so many different legal issues that come up that, yeah, we do the referral to legal services.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that, because Doug's referencing a conversation that we had a little bit before the show when we were talking about the whole issue of bank accounts. So, Sarah, can you talk about that, about, you know, signatory power for a relative on another relative's account, and, you know, how can it affect their personal accounts and all that? Can you talk about that a little?
Well, one of the things that's important is, as long as you're only somebody who's authorized to sign on somebody else's account, your money in your own bank account is not a problem if that person has bad debt or creditors are coming after them. As Doug was saying, if it's a joint account, it becomes a little bit more complicated. But if there's ways to clearly track the money to prove that certain funds in that are only your money, then they actually still are protected, but you'd have to probably litigate it to try to show what funds belong to the person who was the true debtor and what was yours. And frankly, if you know that somebody has debt issues, you don't want to be sharing an account with them. It would be fine to be somebody who's authorized to sign to help them navigate their financial issues, but you don't want to overlap. I mean, that's also sort of another thing that happens with grandparents, you know, with the kids or the grandkids. They co-sign for loans. It's horrible because, you know, the kids or the grandkids default on the loans, and grandparents, who, of course, most seniors have, I think, a much higher moral standard about paying your debts and being frugal, suddenly their credit is just demolished because of the poor actions of their kids or their grandkids. So also, even just co-signing loans, I think, is something that people should do with great caution, unless you really have absolute confidence either that the person you're co-signing with is going to pay the debt, because they're saying, you're going to help me buy a car because you're co-signing, but I'm going to make all the payments, or you know that if they can't, you can make good on the loan and get it paid off. Otherwise, don't do it.
Hmm. I just want to take a moment to let everybody know that you are listening to A Senior Moment on Coast Community Radio, the show for and about seniors. I'm Joanne Rideout, your host. I'm here in the studio today. Our guests are, my co-hosts are Doug Schaefer from Olympic Area Agency on Aging and Michelle Lewis from the Northwest Senior and Disability Services Agency. And Sarah Glorian is our guest. She's an attorney with the Northwest Justice Project. We're talking about power of attorney and related issues, legal issues that can come into play really at any age, but we're kind of focusing on the effect on seniors. So this whole issue kind of, for me, segues into an issue that we've talked about before and other topics on a senior moment, which is the issue of kind of fraud. You know, what if someone's son is kind of not a very savory character, and now they have power of attorney, and they're overseeing the finances of someone who may not be able to realize they're being bilked, or maybe does and doesn't know what to do about it. So how do you address that? Sarah, can I ask you about that?
Well, first of all, I can't emphasize enough that, sadly, the people who are most likely to take advantage of you in your older years are family members. And so you need to really be cautious about who you choose to have take on these obligations. If you know that you have family members who have their own financial difficulties or they're not responsible, don't ask them to be responsible for you when you no longer can be responsible for yourself. It's hard. I mean, and we, you know, so many times when we get the grandma complaining about grandson, they're not going to call the police on the grandson. They're not going to, you know, they just don't have the heart to do it. It's just a traumatic thing, and then they're just, everything falls apart, but they won't do anything about it because they just don't feel like they can turn their kids in. Sometimes they do, but it's rare. So I think to the extent that you can really be careful about who it is you trust, that's the biggest step. And then if you do end up getting jammed up where somebody who you've asked to take care of your circumstances, the thing about the power and the durable power of attorney that's important is you can designate that it's going to be used now and forward, or you can designate it, like for the durable power of attorney, that it goes into effect when you become incapacitated. That's one of the other things that you put on these documents, is when does it become effective? And so a lot of times the durable power of attorneys are put in place for somebody, for instance, that the clients that Doug and Michelle would see, who know that they have been diagnosed with something that's going to progress and get more serious, and they're going to put these documents in place while they're still competent, and then it'll unfold later that they'll be found to be incompetent, and then the power of attorney comes into place. Or they might know, I already know I've got enough slippage, I need somebody to be helping me now. So you're triggered at different points. If at some point the person who's supposed to be taking care of you and honoring what's in the power starts abusing that, unfortunately the person who's they're caring for may be so far along they may not know that. But certainly people who are in the greater part of the services, for instance, certainly Doug's office and Michelle's office may encounter this. There are mandatory reporters, so they can certainly report it to Adult Protective Services and they can investigate it. And certainly other family members can report it. But when it gets into that point, it gets really messy and it gets really ugly. So to the extent that you can be really careful about who you pick in the first place, it's really important. And one of the debates or conversations that Doug and I have at some of the meetings that we go to all the time is Adult Protective Services is very limited in what it can do. So to the extent that somebody is having things going wrong and they're sort of at the root of their own problems, and they say, I'm okay with it, don't get involved, Adult Protective Services can't do anything. But to the extent that somebody is actually being exploited by a third party, Adult Protective Services has some pretty strong tools to go after them, both criminally and civilly. And so it's, you know, but like I said, it's much more important to try to keep it from happening in the first place by choosing wisely.
Well, the whole issue of being declared incompetent, is that a legal status? I mean, if say you are in a position where you have a family member and you want to do the right thing by them, and you've got this durable power of attorney that's framed so that the person has to be declared incompetent, who does that? And is that another legal document that you need to have to say go to the bank or be able to take care of this person's, because you can't just walk into somebody's life and start taking care of their affairs without some documentation to invoke the power of attorney?
Well, right? Actually, like the document that we have posted, there is actually a certification in there that the agent can at some point make the declaration that the person has sort of gone beyond. And it makes it a little bit faster transition because the person has been authorized to help make these decisions versus if somebody, I mean, this is why you want to have a power of attorney, is you're controlling, if you create a power of attorney and empower the people that you want to be honoring your wishes, you're controlling your future. If you don't do that, then what will happen, like more than likely, is Somebody's going to probably have to file a lawsuit to have a guardianship created, and then it might not even be anybody who you want taking care of you, and you certainly will have not had that conversation saying, these are my expectations about end-of-life decisions and all of this. So to the extent that you can be proactive about it, you're avoiding exactly what you're asking about.
Well, what is guardianship? What does that mean as opposed to power of attorney?
Well, the power of attorney is, like I said, you own the power and you create it, you mold it, you define it, you're the one who says, this is what I want taken care of and how. If you haven't put those types of legal instruments in place, then at some point when you no longer can make those decisions, your family members are going to have to go through a very difficult and painful and emotional process to maybe force through law to take control of your situation. And if you haven't had conversations about how you want to be cared for, at that point, even if sometimes, you know, which is some of the tragic parts of this, you are cognizant of what's going on, but you can't make these decisions anymore because you're found incompetent, things are going to be done to you and for you that you don't want. Because somebody's going to be, you know, if somebody does file a lawsuit to have a guardianship established, then you would actually have somebody who's making those decisions for you who may not be somebody who has your best interests at heart, even though for the lawsuit purposes, maybe they've said that they do. It's a path that you have so much control over. I mean, I'm just amazed at how many people have so little willingness to plan this, because the pain and suffering both for yourself and for your family can be minimized dramatically by putting so many of these instruments in place ahead of time.
Well, let me ask you a question. Do you find that people don't want to deal with this kind of issue because it involves death, really? I mean,
denial.
That's the bottom line. Yeah. Yeah.
Denial. It's a big deal. And all the time. And we meet people all the time who just really don't want to deal with that part of their life. They don't want to think about how life can progress and get out of control and what it might look like at the end stages. And they don't want to think about a time where they can't control things in their life anymore. So until the other shoe drops, you know, we oftentimes don't get to talk to them about the choices. We do have options counselors in our office who will come out and visit people in their home, or they come to the office, however they want to do it, and talk about all their different options, whether it be for long-term care or financial options. Sometimes we can look at a person's financial profile and give them an idea what long-term care solutions might be in the future. And in that conversation, we might be bringing up the idea of a power of attorney, or, you know, if things really went awry, what a guardianship was and how to obtain one.
Well,
but yeah, those options are available just by calling our office.
Okay. And Doug, what about you? Are you seeing that? I mean, is it similar on the peninsula and in your jurisdiction over there that, you know, you have trouble getting people to face up to some of these things?
I'm just thinking, I'm just thinking about the fact that I have jurisdiction. That's interesting. Anyway, it's a lot of it's denial, but it's also, we've had cases where we've talked with clients that we've had for an extended period of time starting to fail, and they're kind of wondering. Most of the time, if especially our 80, 90-year-olds, they don't want to be a burden to anybody. So they're thinking, well, if I have them do this, they're going to have to do all this stuff for them. But we tend to talk them through and talk to them about the progression, like Sarah was pointing out. I think of it in terms of a progressive influence that other people can have in your lives. Start with the POA, which is really very limited because I'm just telling you what I want. The DPOA, or do you want someone that maybe you don't know if it has to go to a guardianship thing? And so if people start thinking about, well, you know what, even if nothing happens, I do want the people that I know care about me taking care of me. So let's do it that way, get it in order. And we also tell people, you know what, get it done, get the copies where they need to go, and then you're done. Just, you know, let everybody know where the paperwork is and don't think about it anymore unless you want to change it or revoke it or whatever.
And I'd like to add, I mean, one of the things, I mean, this is just sort of as a personal note, this has nothing to do with any particular sophistication or education or whether or not you have a multi-million dollar estate or you're living on Social Security. It doesn't matter. It's just that it's sort of ironic. It's this idea that you don't want to talk about losing control, but this is your opportunity to control. And I think a lot of times people don't realize that by the time that they have lost control, they've really lost control. And it can be really tragic. And so from like a personal note, my mom's in her 70s and her husband's in his 80s. And I've been having this conversation with my mom for like 5 years, and I'm going back out in October to have another conversation with her. My mom's supremely educated, like a bachelor's, two master's, and a PhD, and she's very vibrant and very busy, but her health is failing somewhat in sort of physical ways. And I've had a conversation with her that I still don't have a straight answer about whether or not she has a power. And like, I remember when I asked her the first time, she said, oh yeah, my lawyer's got it. And so I'm like, well, then you must not have a power, because if you had a power of attorney, somebody other than your lawyer would also have it, who had been designated to be the power, because I'm sure she didn't ask a lawyer who she doesn't know that well to be making these types of decisions for her and handling her finances. And to this day, I still don't have a straight answer. And my mom is, you know, like I said, very well educated and sophisticated, but she doesn't want to talk about these things. And it's a hard thing. So when I'm going back out there, I know her husband is very concerned about her. And so he and I have had conversations. So like when I go out there, we're going to be having another conversation just to see if they understand what they need in the place. And I've always, you know, couched it in, I don't need to be the power. That's not why. I'm not the only lawyer in the family. I'm not the only person who's responsible in this family. It's just that you need to have this in place because I want to make sure that the people who love you know what you want. So it's just sort of funny that people say, I don't want to talk about it because I'm going to, you know, I don't want to think about losing control. But this is an opportunity to really control things in a profound way.
Wow. Well, you know, a lot of times on A Senior Moment, we end up talking about things, these difficult conversations that we've come up in, all these different topics, that things that I guess our culture doesn't handle very well. We don't really have a really great way to talk about things like dying and illness and things like that. Mm-hmm. And something like this seems like a really great way to take control, like you said, and to make sure that your future is as good as it can be. Well, we're getting to the point in the show where it's time for contact information, where we let people know where they can get a hold of folks. So, Sarah, why don't we start with you? Can you just tell people how they can get a hold of you if they want to ask a question? Or
so there's a variety of ways to find us, and I just want to emphasize a few of them. My office is located in Aberdeen, and I serve Grays Harbor and Pacific. We also have an office in Longview, and that office serves Cowlitz and Wakayakum. So those are the local field offices. One of the main ways that you can access us is through our intake lines that go through our Seattle office, where you can actually talk to our lawyers up in Seattle. We have about 30 lawyers that take the calls up there. So the intake line for seniors is 1-888-387-7111. If you have access to the internet, you can actually do intakes online, and then you would call in later, but then you can sort of speed up the process and not be on the call as long. And you can go to our website, which is www.nwjustice.org, and then you look for the clear online, apply online, and you can link to do that. If you're just looking to find out, I feel like I have a legal issue, but I don't know, we maintain an incredible library online. I know that O3A has a large piles of our printouts of some things, and for instance the packet on durable power of attorney is this Q&A packet, and that website is www.washingtonlawhelp.org. Washington, the whole word spelled out, lawhelp.org.
Okay, and one of the things I like to tell people on the show is that if you're driving, if you're just doing something and you can't write this down, you can always call the two agencies that Michelle and Doug represent, and they are kind of clearinghouses for all kinds of contact information, and they could certainly refer you to the Northwest Justice Project. So, Michelle, can you tell us how to get in touch with you?
Yeah, it's probably just best to call our warranted office right now. It's 503-861-4200, or online, it's nwsds.org.
Okay, and Doug, how about you?
In South Pacific County, you call 642-3634. In North County, it's 942-2177, and our website is www.o3a.org.
Well, you've been listening to A Senior Moment, the show for and about seniors. Thanks so much to Doug and Michelle and Sarah for being my guests today. And until next time, take care, and we'll see you on A Senior Moment.